Taking on the giants of big foods is not easy, and that's exactly what Paul Brown has done. So today I'm joined by the founder of Bowl Foods to talk about innovation, bold brand moves, and how to stay ahead in a fast-changing world of plant-based. Episode 15 of Fueling Foodies, let's go. Welcome, Paul. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for the call-up. Really looking forward to the chat.
Really, really looking forward to it. And I think it's a really good time for us to just dig into all of the great things that you're doing at Bowl. And I'm just going to add in how we got to know Bowl. So we were at a marketing conference called Building Brands, which is a really big sort of marketing event down here in the Southwest, and it's ever growing. And we had these amazing goodie bags, and me and my team were all like, love looking in them. Wonder what goodies we've got. And your product was in there. So that is the first moment that we found out about Bowl Foods. But that takes us into the brand. How did it start? What is that ethos behind it? So I'm going to hand it over to you, if that's all right.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's probably one of our power shakes.
Yes.
In the goodie bag, which is our latest piece of innovation. But chronologically, I'm sure we'll come on to that in a bit. So I actually started my career at Innocent Drinks, and that was my first foray into the world of FMCG. I was only 21 years old at the time. Wow. I'd tried and failed at a lot of professional sports. And I was actually a snowboard instructor in Mammoth Mountain in California. Had a really bad injury, so spent the best part of a year recuperating in Los Angeles. And that's where I saw people eating and drinking, you know, healthy foods and living the lifestyle that I think lots of people do around the UK nowadays. So came back, wanted to start my own business, not too dissimilar to Bowl now, but didn't have the funds to get it going, and Innocent Drinks had just launched. So I went and knocked on the door of Fruit Towers, convinced the three founders to give me a job. They gave me, my job interview essentially was to drive one of their very famous fruit vans that looked like I was in Dumb and Dumber, and drive it up to Manchester, where I was from. Because Innocent at the time was only selling in London, and start selling the smoothies out the back of a van. So
wow.
That was day one, and stayed with Innocent for 14 years till the business, as most people in this industry know now, is sold to Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And then the next part of my dream kicked on. I started Bowl Foods on the 30th of April 2015. We've just turned 10. And it's felt like, we call it the Boller Coaster. It's been a hell of a ride, but we are, by the way, you'll work out the three letters, B-O-L, are the most punnable words in the English language. So I'll chill out on the puns. But it's been, from day one, we always wanted to make nutritionally powerful food without compromise. Everything has always been about helping busy people eat well and live their best lives.
Yeah.
And super proud of what the team have done.
And I think, you know, from our perspective, or especially my perspective, I can really relate to that because it's that constantly being on the go. How can you fuel your body properly? And then when you think about the rise of, you know, Gen Zers and the types of foods and consumables that they want, again, it's thinking about how you can fuel your body in the right way with speed as well. So I think it's definitely really, really important. I think as a nation, and, you know, everything that we're focusing on is getting more and more about the nutrition values, how much protein has it got in it, you know, what can it really do for me? Versus I think if we go back sort of 10 years and it was less important, I'm not saying it wasn't important, but it was less important to the end consumer. So it's definitely sort of leveled up in, you know, in our society. And is that what you're seeing from a consumer base, that actually they are focusing more on that and you're putting that messaging front and center? Are you seeing that more?
Yeah, massively. And I think it's needed. We are facing into a lot of challenges when it comes to food and drink. The Joe Wicks License to Kill program that aired last week has kind of really shone a light on the industry. There is an obesity epidemic that we're facing into. We were the first brand to launch into fresh soup and lead with high protein, immunity boosting, all those functional benefits. And for me, we've always kept it just pretty simple at Bol. Almost every product we've ever made, we've always kind of gone into it. It needs to taste absolutely amazing. It needs to be really, truly nutrient dense, and it needs to be packed full of real ingredients and natural whole foods. There are so many commercial shortcuts and additives and preservatives and all that UPF, in my mind, nonsense that you can put into a product. And it's 60% of all the food that we consume in the UK is a UPF. 7% of all adults in the US of A are metabolically healthy. That means 93% are not. Over 90% of the people in the UK don't get enough fiber. There's all of these different very clear data points showing that we're not eating healthy enough. So at Bol, it's all about making products that you could make at home if you had the time and a load of great ingredients, and if you're a half decent cook, but having them on the move.
So I guess that takes us into a pretty bold move going into your, well, the industry that you sit in, and that's removing that meat, fish, and dairy piece and thinking about that in terms of your brand. Can we talk a little bit more about what drove that decision and how did that feel internally? Did it feel like it was the right decision? Did it feel alien? Just talk me through that a little bit.
So we started the business in 2015, like I mentioned earlier, and the first couple of years was more of a success than we anticipated. We were profitable. We donated all of our profits to the Action Against Hunger charity. We actually just won New Business of the Year at the National Business Awards. And we had, as you mentioned, we had lots of recipes that contained meat, fish, and dairy. We had a lot of vegetarian recipes as well. But I just watched Cowspiracy. I read incredible books like How Not to Die, and I guess realized that the industrialized food system is not having a great impact on our health or the planet. And so half of our recipes were vegan and vegetarian, and half of them weren't. And so made the pretty bold decision, like you say, to drop the recipes with meat, fish, and dairy pretty much overnight. And they were ironically our best-selling recipes.
Oh.
And we half the size of the business. But we did it because, I mean, I couldn't have read the tea leaves. I couldn't have known that, certainly for a few years, that whole plant-based trend would become so mainstream. But I just knew that no matter where you stand on the nutritional food spectrum, unless you are like a hardcore, I'm just going to, adopt the carnivore diet, which good luck to you on the cholesterol front. But most people know that the best diet one can eat is mainly plant-based and minimally plant-based, with meat, fish, and dairy thrown in as and so as and when you wish. So we're all about making it easy for anyone to enjoy eating more plants, and that often means meat eaters, which is, we're not here to make it easy for more vegans to eat more vegan food. But that was a true strategic pivot. I think that term gets overused a lot in the industry. When you make a decision to half the size of your business and truly go into the unknown, and it was pretty scary. The investors weren't too happy. I told the team here to brush up their CVs because we might not have got through it. But I just genuinely felt that we could be a business that could stand for so much more. And I mean, that happened in 2016, 17, just under 10 years ago now. Feels like a lifetime ago. And often people don't see the brand as a plant-based brand, and I see that as a compliment. I was even in a big meeting with one of the top four retailers the other day, and we talked about the plant-based elements of the brand, and they didn't know. And that's because we have a delicious bolognese recipe that happens to be made with lentils. Our power shakes sit in the dairy drinks category, and clearly we use coconut milk, not dairy milk. But it's not the front and center that consumers should not need to compromise. And I think that's probably something some of the entrepreneurs who may listen to this podcast, like, it needs to be matching or better anything else. And I think we can go toe-to-toe with any soup, any meal, or any complete nutrition drink and happen to be plant-based.
Yeah. And so we sit in the rolling hills of Devon. We are surrounded by farms and, you know, some amazing food and drink brands, a lot of who we've worked with over the years for a really long time. And just going back to your, you know, your meat element, I worked for a client and I was on the farm. I saw, you know, where it came from, how it was then butchered. And it is so important that actually the qualities of the meat, the fish and the dairy, that as, like you say, as a consumer, if it's in there, they know it's of good quality. So for us, it's something that, you know, we do in terms of marketing quite a lot, because a lot of our clients, that is their USP, that is their front and center. This is meat that actually is reared as it should be, and all of that stuff as well. So totally can relate to that. But just from a marketing perspective, so we sit in digital marketing, we sit in the digital world. So a lot of our clients sell products online and it's that sort of D2C world, and a lot of our audience that will listen to this are in that space as well. So just talk to me about when you did do the pivot, in inverted commas, what did that mean from a marketing perspective? Because naturally all of your marketing would then have to change. So what was that like as a, you know, as a process? Was that a difficult one? Was it a long one? Are you still auto-correcting now, even 10 years down the line?
I think it's a great question. I've never actually been asked it like that. I think it's our North Star has always been about helping busy people eat well. So even though from a product benefit, it's quite a radical change, the fundamentals of what we were trying to achieve still remain the same. The why was definitely sharpened, but the consumer benefit was still the same. It's just a different way of achieving that goal. So it was less about our comms completely changing. It was more about just being even more pointed with what we stand for. And I think that really helps in this day and age where consumers are probably more savvy than ever because there's more information readily available to them.
Yeah.
And you can look under the bonnet of any brand, and whether it's, have you heard of the Yuka score?
No.
So it's an app, Y-U-K-A, and it's, I mean, originally came from the cosmetics industry, but it's now rife in food and drink. So if you've got that app on your phone, you can scan the barcode of any product, so any food and drink product, and it will give you a Yuka score. And okay. The growth of it is incredible at the moment. So I'm often asked, in amongst all of the different noise about you should have this diet, you should eat this foods, or what's healthy, what's not healthy, this is a neutral body which analyzes from a nutritional standpoint how healthy a product is. So combining this with the traffic lights and everything else, I think consumers can establish whether or not something is going to deliver to their needs. So we just became even more focused on telling people, if you want to get high protein products, if you want to get rich in fiber, if you want them packed with whole foods, and you don't have time to cook from scratch, because I would actively encourage people to cook from scratch as much as possible. And if they do have the time, never buy a bowl. But if you don't, then I think we're the next best alternative. So it's more about kind of heading more into that lifestyle side of the benefits and not just talking about the ingredients themselves, because that gets a bit boring to people after a while.
Yeah. So, and again, this is where I get a little bit geeky, but talk to me about your consumer. What does your ideal or normal bowl consumer look like? What sort of age are they? What demographic? Because I love hearing sometimes brands have a name for their consumer or a name for, you know, who it is internally. So do you have that? Do you have that person that you all talk about?
It's funny because when you said the ideal consumer, I mean,
who is that?
Someone that loves us and buys a lot. I'm happy with that. No, from a pen portrait perspective, without kind of coming across as kind of too corporate-y on it, of course we have like a bullseye target consumer who we need to target. We're a digitally led brand from a marketing perspective. A big proportion of our investment goes on Meta ads, and you don't want wastage there, right? So I've not met you in person. I've only met you for the last 20 minutes we've been talking on this podcast, but I could already work out you're probably pretty bullseye. So,
am I? I'm a consumer. There we go.
it's young, largely professional, ABC One, looking to eat healthy, lead a relatively healthy lifestyle. That's our target shopper. But Tesco is our biggest customer, and we buy into their Dunnhumby data, and it gives you huge amounts of insight on people that buy us. And actually, we've got a big over-index with your profile that is actually called Roshni. You were looking for a name. They call it Roshni.
Love that.
But we actually have a real over-index with people over the age of 50 who might be not cooking as much as they used to, might have had, you know, people that have fled the nest or whatever it might be. And they love our meals and our soups as well. So it depends. When you ask about an ideal consumer, it's like a joke about someone that loves us and buys us. But there is a massive spread on that.
Yeah.
But when it comes to your marketing efficiencies, I truly believe you need a real target.
Yeah.
And you focus most of your energy on that. But you will always get people outside of that buying you in the shops as well.
Yeah. And just, you know, so you think about the brand 10 years ago, think about it now, and that sort of scaling journey around Bowl and growing it and going into, you know, what's the next sort of growth phase for the business? How do you scale and grow, but without losing that authenticity and, you know, keeping true to those values and making sure that even though you are growing and, you know, you're going on this journey as a brand and as a business, how do you still just stay really grounded to exactly like you were saying a minute ago, we want to make sure people can have the most healthy foods at home when, you know, when they need it. How do you keep really close to that mission when there's scale and growth in the mix as well? Because that's something that a lot of brands that we work with ask us a lot. And there's always that sort of, it's like a scale, isn't it? It's around how do you keep true to your missions and your values, but also grow at a really fast pace? Or, you know, what does that scale look like? So can we just delve into that a little bit more?
Yeah, I think it's just being really clear from the outset what your vision is.
Yeah.
We do have a global mission for the brand to become a global plant-based brand that wins with our natural credentials. Our mission is all about making nutritionally powerful food. And like I said to you, our purpose is about being able to inspire people to enjoy eating more plants, live their best life. You combine that with the values that are actually on the wall in our meeting room here.
Do you know, I did wonder what was on the wall behind you. So I'm really glad that you've pulled that round, because that's, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, we've got our clear values that anyone that joins the business, you know, we've got a value around family. It's all about more kind of band of brothers and sisters rather than just colleagues. Our second value is around ownership, so truly taking accountability.
Yeah.
There's then something around growth, so having that growth mindset, because times will always be tough and it's about how you kind of come out of them with the right attitude. Our fourth and penultimate is around excellence. So really, if we say we're going to do something, we do it, and we do it to the highest standard possible. And the final one is around legacy. And I think the final one is probably the value that most links to the question you've just asked, because if you're truly bought into the purpose of the brand, which we've got a team of 30 people here who have trodden the boards at massive businesses like P&G or L'Oreal and Innocent Drinks, and they've taken a bit of a risk joining a startup scale-up in Bol. But a lot of the reason that they've done that is because they truly want to make an impact and do consider purpose over profit. So we've got to be a commercial business, but we've got to avoid the commercial shortcuts. We can't fall on our sword when it comes to making decisions that aren't aligned to our values for scale. And if that means it takes us a little bit longer to scale, then that's fine. So the product that you mentioned earlier, are the power shakes, You know, we've headed into that category, and there's some massive brands there. Huel is globally the number one nutritionally complete brand, like, in the world. Y Food, who sits next to us, is owned by Nestle.
Yeah,
those guys, like, they're doing a brilliant job, and chapeau to them. They've created the category where we sit, but we're doing things differently. We're using real ingredients, and we're really pushing that whole food element. And so it's about offering something that can valorize a category and recruit new people into the category. Because if you just try and scale by doing the same as what everyone else, particularly as a smaller brand,
yeah,
you will ultimately get eaten alive. So you need to stick to those principles if they're truly part of your DNA.
And again, what we see a lot is a food and drink brand might come to us. They might have, you know, their core offering, and then they might go into a different category with a different product. So a really good example of that is, I'm a popcorn brand. I sell a popcorn product, but actually I'm going to go into the chocolate category, for example. So, you know, crossing those categories is also really interesting. And again, it's where I really love to geek out, is how, as a food and drink brand, even though you're in one category, can you then diversify and go into other categories? And again, even saying that, your consumer then changes as well, doesn't it? Your marketing message, your, you know, everything that you're pushing is then totally different, because the need and desire is different. So just from a plant-based category, naturally, that's kind of been on a bit of a journey, hasn't it? If we think about plant-based, you know, 5 years ago to where we are now with plant-based, and like I say, the rise of the Gen Zers who are so health conscious with what they're looking for. And I'm a millennial, and I think we sit in the middle of, you know, we're conscious about what we're eating. And again, I can only talk from, you know, I was brought up, we had home cooked meals, no fast foods. You know, we still cook now from scratch, and I'm teaching my little stepdaughter to do the same. But I think we're from a generation where we know that, but I think the next generation sort of below us, they are so much more health conscious than we ever were. Mm-hmm. So plant-based has obviously had its sort of roller coaster ride over the last few years, but what do you think has helped the trend of plant-based, and what do you think's helped it sort of rise and fall, and, you know, what's that look like? Because it's a difficult one, isn't it?
There it is, and it's the rise of some of those fake meat brands, particularly over that COVID era, was pretty incredible. I mean, I've not looked at the numbers for a few years, but I think Beyond Meat got to valuations at many, many billions, and now I think it's in the millions. So I do feel that the whole industry started drinking its own plant-based Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And I said, I thought there was going to be a backlash against what I call dirty veganism, because if a product is high in salt, high in oil, high in sugar, if people are choosing that because they think it's healthier for them, and then they get under the skin of things and realize maybe it isn't, then there is going to be a bit of a backlash. So I think plant-based, well, I don't think plant-based is going to be here forever, right?
There's
not going to be, you're never going to lie on your deathbed and be told you've eaten too many vegetables. So it's just at what point in which category plant-based is going to continue to play a really important role. And I believe it's going to be more in the naturally plant-based, as, you know, those plant-based products that are minimally processed as possible, as opposed to the fake meat, pretty processed alternatives.
Yeah.
But I think things are still very much leveling out on that front.
Yeah. And I think it's an interesting one to watch, and I'm sure you keep a closer eye than I do, but I'm sure over the next sort of 6 months to a year, the sort of trends within that are going to be really interesting to watch. So where, if I'm a consumer, I go into a store, where can I buy Bol? What can I buy as well? What can I feel in front of me outside of that online world, so that we can point everybody in the direction of picking up your great products?
Amazing. So kind of go throughout the day, because we've got three different product ranges. So we've got our power shakes here, and these are play perfectly in what's called the smart food category. So it is a complete nutrition drink lots of people are having them for breakfast or having them pre or post workout.
I really need those. I need to top up on those. That's what I need to do.
Okay, we need to get those some samples to you then. But they're available in the dairy aisle or front store in lots of the big supermarkets.
Amazing.
Then we have our fresh soups. So these are the soups, and they're in the fresh soup fixture in the big supermarkets and can be bought online as well. And then finally, this is the new range. It's only actually launched in the last couple of weeks. So this is our Power Pot Protein Plus range. I said it to the team yesterday. I think this might be the most nutrient-dense, chilled-prepared meal on the planet. So it's high in protein, over 30 grams of protein, and it's high in fiber as well. So these have just launched into Tesco in the last couple of weeks. So that's where people can buy them. And we've got a store locator, so they can check it out on the website.
Check it out. And you just actually took the next question out of my mouth. I was going to say, what's next for Bol? What is the next sort of big move? Can you tell us anything? I know 2026 is obviously on the horizon, and we think about things like Veganuary, and we think about, you know, health and wellness when we get to that new year piece, which I would imagine is a big time of year for you. But can you give us any teasers for next year or what's to come? But I think you've given me one teaser with your pot that's just about to go in.
Exactly. No, a couple of things spring to mind there. Firstly, international. So we've got some big things happening in the world of taking the brand international. In the last couple of weeks, we've just launched into Albert Heijn, which is the biggest supermarket in the Netherlands.
Amazing.
So we want to be rolling out across the whole of the Benelux. So Belgium, Luxembourg and the Netherlands. And then there are other countries around the world that we'd love to be in within the next year. So that's a big area of focus. And actually, we've only just relaunched our D2C. So we did D2C for a few years. It didn't quite work out for us. I don't think we had the right proposition. So it was when our shakes were in a glass bottle and it wasn't really conducive to sending around in the D2C world. But in the last 6 months, we've relaunched D2C and it's absolutely flying. So we really want to scale that channel. That is a big part of what we're doing. And then the final thing is just around our product range. So I've just gone into detail about the three product ranges that we have. It's less about coming out with anything new beyond that at this stage. It's just about really improving what we've got and bringing out new product angles within those families.
Amazing, amazing, amazing. And D2C is absolutely the world that we live and breathe. So if you ever want to ask anything D2C, you know where we are because we absolutely love it. But before we end this pod, I really need to touch on the snowboarder piece because I know we've been talking all about Bol Foods and all of that stuff. But let's go right back to the beginning. What happened in terms of that with the snowboarding and the accident?
So I'd qualified as a professional a week earlier. Oof. So I could actually teach people. And I was then in a border cross race.
Okay.
So for those people that don't know what border cross is, it's going down the mountain as quickly as you can, going over massive jumps. It's relatively dangerous, as I found out. And I was in a race and I went over a huge jump, went about 40 foot in the air, landed on my arm, broke every bone in my wrist, dislocated my elbow. So it was a pretty traumatic injury at the time. But it's always about context, isn't it? Because one of my best mates on the same day was playing professional rugby and he broke his back. So it was on my 21st birthday this all happened. And it's just one of those things that who knows where these bad injuries are going to lead. But it's definitely helped me focus on the world of food, not being paid to play sport.
Yeah, that's it. And the only reason I asked as well is I am such a keen skier. I absolutely love skiing, which snowboarders and skiers don't really get on, do they? But that's why I asked. Where were you based as well? Were you based abroad?
It was in Mammoth Mountain in California.
Yeah, amazing.
So it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I ski as well, but just not as good.
Yeah, just not as good. I'm not as good a skier. Amazing. Exactly. And then the only other piece that we haven't touched on. So we are massive Innocent fans, absolutely love from a branding perspective. And when I say Innocent fans, I've got a little 7-year-old that loves their smoothies. But from a brand perspective, you know, we follow their marketing. It's quite bold. It's quite out there in terms of what they do. What was your journey at Innocent like for 14 years being there? Because I would imagine you saw quite a lot of change and movement within that time that has probably shaped, you know, the things that you're doing now at Bowl, because you've, you know, you've been there, you've been in a business, you've grown it, you scaled it, and actually it gives you a really good front foot, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I could talk for hours about what I learned at Innocent, and clearly we don't have the time, but yeah, would I actively encourage anybody listening to really dig deep on the Innocent story, because it was started by three incredible founders. They were mates from university. They all had proper jobs, and they went to a music festival and started making smoothies and had a yes bin and a no bin and asked people, should we give up our normal jobs and start selling smoothies? And the yes bin was full, and the no bin had a few messages in there, mainly from their parents saying, don't do it, stick to the normal careers. And they did it. And so they started in the late 90s, and they truly broke the mold from the products that were made to the way it was communicated on pack to the team and the culture that we built there. So much that I'd actually dropped out of university, and I felt I kind of fell into the best business school I possibly could.
Yeah.
It was an incredible place, and clearly I've not been there for over a decade now, and it's now owned by Coca-Cola, but my understanding is it's still, it's very much run as a standalone business in London with lots of passionate people trying to pick up the mantle from where we left off. But it is a brand that I think has, you know, spawned many different great things that have happened across the world of FMCG over the last two decades.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Totally agree with you there. We're going to have to wrap up. I feel like that time has just gone so quickly in terms of our conversation, but I just want to finish on. So naturally, we work with founder-led brands. We sit in the food and drink space. We're based in Devon and London as well. But one piece of advice, if you were to start from the beginning, right again, and you were to say, this is my piece of advice for another founder who is in your shoes, what would it be? Because that would be so valuable for our audience. And we have clients coming to us in that position all the time. So it's a bit of an open-ended question, but on purpose.
I think I'm going to put two into one when my brain goes. So I think there's something about things happening. Things will more than likely happen a lot slower than you would like. So don't get too disheartened with that. Like I said, I tried to start my first business in my early 20s and didn't actually get it off the ground until my mid-30s.
Yeah.
But if you've got the right mindset and you can see and concentrate on the process, if you really, really want it, it will come. But it can't be rushed. And I'd encourage everybody to get their elevator pitch down. And for me, an elevator pitch is can you explain your business idea in 7 words or less?
Yeah.
And not if you can explain it within a couple of minutes. And you don't know who's ever going to walk into that elevator. But my favorite one is the it's like Top Gun, but with cars.
Yeah.
And that was the elevator. That was the elevator pitch to Fast and the Furious. And it's just like, people just, which is like the fourth biggest film franchise of all time. Yeah. So really, really honing down what it is that you're trying to create and not getting too disheartened if it doesn't come off as quick as you like, because it can be done. And I think it's probably this day and age is as good a time as any to follow your kind of entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. Love it. Thank you. Really, really impressive. And I think from our perspective, those sort of golden nuggets of insight, inspiration as well, because you're sitting there, you've done it, is absolutely fantastic. And just doing it as well, you know, especially from a data perspective, we live and breathe data, and we can read data and prove, you know, this is your customer, this is what your audience is. And this is where you need to then focus, obviously, from a marketing perspective. But from a business perspective, again, you know, read your customer. Who is your customer? Talk to them, get them, you know, get them in front of you. And from our perspective, from a, you know, from a who is actually our customer in a food and drink world, when we got to the point where we really knew what we loved, whether that's, you know, D2C, food and drink, and we really went into that sort of niche. And like you say, you can say it in 6 or 7 words. What do you do? So powerful. So I absolutely agree with that. Thank you so much, Paul. Really, really appreciate your time. And I know that our audience will absolutely love to listen to everything about Bol. And I hope they go and check you out as well. Go and check them out on socials. Go and look at their Insta. Go and take a look at their website as well. If you're near a supermarket, make sure you go down that dairy aisle. But thank you so, so much. I really, really appreciate it. And I think that's us.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks, Paul. Speak to you soon.